So we are in week 3 of session 2 and unit 5 of the book. That's confusing, isn't it? I don't know how to avoid that. But if you follow along week by week, it should make pretty good sense. So a couple of practical things. I sent out an email, certainly to everybody in the teacher training about the mentor program, and that should be up and running. I have one more little detail that I'll add to in the next day or two. And let me remind you that the mentor program, so assigning people to work with other people in the training program, everybody in the training program gets a mentor. That's also open to everybody. If you would like to have a mentor, and mentor here basically means kind of like a TSK friend, you know, somebody who would look at some of your own thoughts and explorations and give you feedback, so that you could perhaps explore other areas or dimensions that you hadn't thought of. That's what a mentor doesn't necessarily mean, like, you know, the person who's going to explain to you how it really is. That's my job, right? My job is to encourage inquiry. Let's see. Michael Keough says that probably should have been a private message, but no problem, Michael. If you did apply for the teacher training but got no response, send me an email again. I don't remember receiving it. So you send me an email, and or Kathleen, and she can get it to me, and we'll look at that. So that program is in place, and anybody can ask to have a mentor. But if you ask to have a mentor, you are also committing yourself to pretty regularly do the assignments. You know, we're not requiring 100%, but pretty regularly. So that's the mentor program. I also wanted to remind you that next Sunday we are not meeting. So there's a break between week 3 and week 4, both of which are introducing the theme of time. And let me remind you further, those of you who are in the United States, that the following Sunday is the Sunday of Thanksgiving weekend. And we will meet that Sunday. But, you know, often people make plans for that weekend. So see if you can arrange your plans so that you can participate in the Sunday call. Or, of course, you can always listen to it later. And then one more final practical message issue, and that is that the reading, if you look at the readings online on the website, the reading for next week adds 3 pages. We're getting some big swishing sounds from somewhere. And Kathleen, I'm sure you're on that and working with it. Kind of looks like it might be coming from Bruce, just looking at, trying to decipher what these terms mean. Anyway, I don't think it interferes too much with going ahead, but a little bit. So the reading for next week adds 3 pages to the assignment that's in When It Rains. So if you just look up When It Rains, you will have missed the last 3 pages. It won't be a big deal, but if you want to do it the way it's intended, then you should add those extra 3 pages. Okay, so that's enough for next week, which is a non-week. It doesn't exist in our calendar, and the week after. So now let's get going. So, you know, I think the key point, really, in this week's reading, this introduction to time, is that we don't ordinarily experience time at all. We don't have any way of connecting with time or relating to time except as a concept. And if you think back to what we looked at in space over the last couple of sessions, Rinpoche says the same thing about space. Both of them are just not accessible to us. And we need to spend a little time, excuse me, we need to spend a little time looking at this, because I think with space, there's a kind of plausibility to that. Space is nothing at all, right? And so how can you possibly contact nothing? That's our ordinary understanding of space. I'm not saying that's the TSK understanding, but that's our ordinary understanding. So fine, you know, how can you connect with it? How can we have any experience of it? So our first approach to space is a kind of conceptual approach. But with time, it's a little bit different, because we tend to think that we really are in contact with time in some sense. We're certainly always thinking in terms of time, past and present and future, but that in itself doesn't tell us too much, because that's just the concept of time, that it gets, you can split it up in terms of the three times of past, present, and future. But then we also have this sense that is often referred to in the TSK books, that time is bearing down on us, that we don't have enough time, and so on. There's many, many things in our experience that reflect a certain relationship to time. So the question we want to look at is why is it really accurate to say that we are not in touch with time? We're going to look at that, and actually we'll do a little practice with that in a few minutes, and see what kind of, how people react to that. But it's certainly true that's what TSK says. So there's a quote in When It Rains, and it's actually a quote taken from the reading, but I'll just refer to it. It's on page 120 of TSK, and at the very bottom of page 39 in When It Rains, and it says, the first stage of relating to time is devoid of any direct experience of the lower time which it is said to involve. So this is really important for understanding what the TSK vision is about. You know, if somebody said to you, or if you were teaching, let's imagine, for those of you who were in the teacher training, and somebody wanted to know, the very short version, in this country we sometimes say the elevator version, what you could tell somebody while you were riding up in an elevator, if they wanted to know the elevator version of what TSK is about, it might be, I'm not saying this is the best way, but it might be the one answer you could say is, we don't have any direct experience of space, we don't have any direct experience of time, and given that, our knowledge is going to be inherently incredibly limited, because space and time seem to be absolutely fundamental factors in our experience. So the knowledge that we operate and the way we have of experience is deeply, deeply reduced or constricted or imperfect because we don't have that direct experience. It's really central to starting to understand why it would be important to explore the TSK vision. Can we maybe reverse that, or can we find a way to connect with space and time and enjoy and exercise the knowledge that leads to? If we can, what changes does that produce? And the reading for today actually talks a little about that. What changes might come along as a result of that? But that's really the question. It's very, very, it's very important. I mean, it just seems to me a nice way to think about, why are we doing this anyway? What's the point of exploring the TSK vision? And another way to think about that would just be the opposite side. You'd say, well, when we think about time, when we think about space as being too crowded and time as being too full of stuff, things we have to do and so on, and kind of coming, bearing down on us, always presenting things that before we're ready to deal with them, all of that maybe relates to the fact that we really just don't have any way of connecting with space and time to begin with. So we need to look. So one way to think about this is, and I'm still looking at the question of, you know, time and space both have the same aspect of no direct experience, of only a kind of conceptualized version. So you might think back to the very beginning of the TSK book, and you remember Rinpoche says, in the first sentence of the book, he says, wherever we go, whatever we do, in this crowded surface of interactions, above us is the sky. And then he says, the sky is a local representative or a symbol of space. And it's a very nice image. I think it's a very memorable line and kind of helps you to get a little sense of what the TSK vision is about. But it's also true that we don't really experience the sky. I mean, first of all, you'd say it's at a distance. Right, kind of, it's up there. It's this big blue canopy over us, and in fact, you know, if you imagine if you're flying in a plane or a spaceship, even then, it's not quite right to say that you experience the sky. Although I'm not going to insist on that, but it's also true that there isn't anything called the sky really. The sky is kind of our word for the experience that we have when we look up. The sky is not separate from outer space. It's just this part that's blue. So we look up and there's this blue canopy, this blue umbrella over everything. And so we call that the sky. But we don't really have the experience of it. And yet at the same time, of course, it's very real for us. And the openness of it suggests the possibility that the openness of space. So it's in that sense that it's a local representative or a symbol. Now, you could say something similar about time, and that's really why I'm making the comparison right now. But I don't know that there's exactly the same local representative like the sky. What's real for us in the way that the sky is real for us, even though we can't touch it, at least in the way that the book presents it, is the flow of time. Things are always moving along from past to present to future, past to present to future. And we look back and we automatically assign something to the past if we are remembering something, or we automatically assign something to the future if we're planning ahead. But we don't ever really contact the past and the future, do we? So Michael asks a question here, a couple of questions, actually. He says, well, aren't space and time modes of experience rather than contents of experience? And he goes on to ask, how can there be experience without them? That's how experience is presented to us. Well, that's exactly the right question to ask. So we want to look at it in a couple of minutes. We want to look at it more experientially, but theoretically, this is exactly the issue. When we make sense of our experience, we do so in terms of space and time. And it's fair to say, you know, how could there even be experience without them? Although, you know, you might answer that by saying, well, we have experiences, perhaps in terms of fantasies or daydreams, for instance, where it's not exactly clear how space and time, ordinary space and time, figure into those. But that would be a long conversation. I don't think we want to really get into that. It's true, experience is presented to us in terms of space and time. But that's not the same, or it leaves open the question, are we actually in contact with space, and are we actually in contact with time? Or are we just using those particular structures, the temporal structure and the spatial structure, to make sense of our experience? So, you know, just on the theoretical level, we're kind of talking on the level of theory right now. There have been philosophers, many philosophers actually, have argued that space doesn't exist and that time doesn't exist. And there are reasons for arguing that, and you know, that you could go back and forth with that. But for our purposes, we don't need to try to answer that question. We just need to say that, you know, the reason that that question, or we need to see, let's say, that the reason that that question is even possible is because it's not so obvious, or it's, in fact, it's not even, you know, what can I say? It may not be true at all. That's certainly what the TSK book says. In the first instance, that if we try to connect with space, if there's anything there for us to connect with, we can connect with distance, sort of. That, again, these are all questions that are worth exploring. We can connect maybe with distance. We can connect with separation. We can connect. We certainly have our sense, our felt sense, that something is in the past rather than in the present. Those are all things that are related to time. But is there any point in which we can say, well, now I'm really experiencing time? So that's what we want to explore. And maybe let's do that right now as an experiential question. So this is not... in a sense, it's a theoretical reflection, but it's not theory in the sense of, well, let me think about this and see if it makes sense. It's a question that comes up in our experience. Let's take a couple of minutes and just look and see. In what sense can you say that you are in contact with time? So I'm referring back to that quote, which says that our initial way of experiencing time does not bring us into contact with time at all. Let me go back and get that quote. The first stage of relating to time is devoid of any direct experience of the lower time which it is said to involve. So do we have direct experience of time? The TSK books and this first TSK book in particular says no, we don't, and yet in a way there's a sense in which we say, but wait a minute, we have to, you know, that's what our experience is made up of, right? That's our experience, quoting Michael, that's our experience is presented to us. So let's look and see for ourselves for a couple of minutes. Really, look in your experience. What is there that's the time dimension of experience, not the explanation of what experience is about, but actually tasting or touching or sensing time. Is that possible? So we'll do that for a couple of minutes, okay? Okay. So I'm interested in your reactions. What did you observe? And if anybody wants to speak up, now's the time, or if you want to, as usual, type things in the chat area, that's fine. So while you're typing, okay, let's see. Yes, of course, Caroline. Okay. 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 So there is a sense of movement and flow. It seems like all of those, you know, share something, right? That should and change. Okay. So we are in touch with those things: movement, flow, change, and I see that. Well, let's see. Take a look at other people's comments. So Philip says, "Whatever exists, if anything does exist, certainly is not dependent on words that we created to try to explain our experience. Nothing is presented to us. We just inhabit what exists or doesn't exist, don't we? We're part of it. And who guarantees that what exists has any permanent characteristics? So it's very likely that time and space don't exist as such." Okay, well, that's a sort of a theoretical take on this question, and I think it's a good way of framing the question or asking about it, because we do have this very strong tendency to say, well, time and space must exist, so I must be able to connect with them. Now, we might be able to connect with them even if they don't exist. It never depends a lot on what we ended up saying about what it means to exist. So, okay. Klaus, you posted privately. I think you meant to post publicly. I'm just wanting to make sure people understand how the whole website, the whole online thing works. But what Klaus said, there's a sense of something going on. And that's, I think, at bottom, that's the same thing that Caroline said. And in fact, the words going on are nice in that way. I always like language that is kind of verbal, that has to do with verbs. So we say, well, something's going on. And so it's going and it keeps on going. It's going on. And that's the sense of time. So the question would be, and again, this is related to what Caroline said, can we connect with the sense of the going on instead of what it is that's going on, right? That would be kind of the fundamental distinction. David has, and a couple of people, David and Robert have both posted something here. I'll come back to those, but I want to go back, or I want to interrupt that for a moment, just to say something about one way of thinking about this that gets talked about in Western philosophy and 20th century philosophy. So in the early 20th century, there was a philosopher, a French philosopher named Bergson. And Bergson really wrote a lot about time. He's very interested in time. And he suggested that there were two kinds of time. One is the kind of indexed time, as Rinpoche says, that divides things up into past, present, and future. And the other one is the kind of time which has more to do with this going on quality, this something happening quality. And he called that, in French, he called that durée. And that usually gets translated as duration. I think, I don't speak French, but people question whether that's a great translation, but let's go with it. And he gives an interesting definition, you could say, trying to explain what he means by duration. And it's very much related to what has come up in our discussion so far. So I'm going to quote it. He says, "Let us imagine an infinitely small piece of elastic." So you could just say a rubber band. It's a little simpler. "Let us imagine an infinitely small piece of elastic contracted, if that were possible, to a mathematical point. Let us draw it out gradually in such a way as to bring out of the point a line which will grow progressively longer. Let us fix our attention not on the line as line, but on the action which traces it." I'm not sure why he says traces rather than the action which actually does the pulling out. But in any event, his point is that the action which is pulling this elastic out, geez, it helped to have my hands there, no. Does the action which is pulling the elastic or the rubber band out, that's duration. But it's the action, all right? It's not the rubber band. It's not the things that show up in being pulled out. And that's the kind of distinction, yes? Did someone say something or want to? Nope. Okay. There's another thinker who talks about this, someone that I'm fond of, William James, and he says, he uses a very different image. He talks about a bird that's sitting on a tree, and the English word for that is that the bird is perched on the tree. And he says, when we look at experience, we're always looking at the places where the bird perches, but we're never looking at the places or the times, the aspect where the bird is flying from one perch to another. And that, again, you could say that's the duration, that's the aliveness. And we're not in contact with it. That's his conclusion, which is very much what Rinpoche is suggesting. But I realize that, you know, what you're saying here is, well, but wait, I really am in touch with something. I'm in touch with this sense of change and movement and something going on. So we need to ask, you know, I'm not arguing if that's wrong in any way. And in fact, I want to say more about it in a moment. So David says, with respect to this question, when I become very calm, I experience the input from the senses. If I calm down even more, I experience the input before I begin to characterize it in terms of what it is, smell, sound, etc. That raw input of events might be considered basic elements of the flow of time. Yeah, might be. That's right. There are, you know, the flow of time is also, in a sense, the aliveness of time. And we want to look at that in a moment. Let's go ahead. Robert says, the experience of time seems married to movement, movement of breath, the wind, thought. Yes, so we're kind of coming to agreement here, although Robert, you bring in the wind. You know, there's outside events as well as our kind of felt bodily sensations and the breath, and maybe the flow of thought. There's many, many things flowing and moving. There's no question about that, it seems like, in our experience. I suppose the question is, are we in touch with that the movement instead of the things that move from moment to moment? So if you watch your breath, for instance, well, I don't want to beat this point into the ground. I think it's clear. You could look at that with your breath. Caroline says, durée means to last. Yeah, actually, it's spelled D-U-R-E-E with an accent mark over the first E, I think. Not the French. Probably my bad pronunciation. But yeah, it means a kind of enduring. We have the word endure, which has the durée in it. But his point is he's trying to point to something that is different from just the way things ordinarily are. He's trying to capture, if that's the right way to say it, this sense of the flow, the movement that everybody here that has been pointing to. Right? David asks for the name of the philosopher. His name is Bergson. B as in boy, E-R-G-S-O-N. I see Michael has already said that, so, okay. Michael, this is Michael Gray, bobbing up and down as when out past the breaking surf. Okay, so we're in the ocean, out past the breaking surf, rocking back and forth as if sitting on a branch of a tree in a breeze. There doesn't seem to be a need to respond or explain or connect with anything outside of us. Okay, so that's a very nice image. And I think everybody's been pointing towards something, toward related points. I'm not going to try to distinguish any further. So, okay, so we do have a sense that something is changing, is moving, that there's something, maybe something rhythmic, there's something peaceful that does seem to involve the energy of time. Now, I don't think that's at all inconsistent with what Rinpoche says when he says, at the first level, we don't really have any experience of time. Because we're talking about something, I think, a little different, where we do have some sense of a dynamic, of an aliveness. So, I could be wrong, but I think what Rinpoche is saying is ordinarily we go through time, we go through life, rather, and we're always referring to the past and the present and the future, but we don't really connect with them. You know, it's always kind of just a way of structuring experience, this sort of linear progression of moments, one to the next, and using time as a kind of an index. So, you know, the basic image there, or metaphor there, is a watch, right? Especially a watch that has a second hand, where there's this kind of, actually probably not a second hand, more like digital watches, where the seconds just go click, 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 click. Right? Or I guess we usually say tick, 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 tick. Okay. But it's possible to go to a different level, and I'm not talking now about the second level of time, that's a separate issue, but just a part of our experience where we are in touch with the aliveness of time. So we want to talk about that now. You know, what everybody was pointing to, really, and everybody was saying, well, yeah, there's something there, there's some experience of time there, don't tell me I don't have an experience of time. I think what I would say about that, and this is also really important in terms of how the TSK vision works, let's say, is that when we say we're in touch with the when we say we're experiencing time, what we're saying is we experience the present moment, we experience the aliveness of the present moment. Now it may reach out. You know, it's the present moment is not necessarily this one little click. You know, this one nanosecond, as Rinpoche writes in other places, that you can just separate out from everything else. But being in the present has a past dimension and it has a future dimension, and the exercises that. Well, one of which was assigned for this week, which was exercise 18B, which had to do with just noticing how we move from, or how often we're in the past and how often we're in the future and how sometimes we're also in the present. That's one way in, and there's a whole series of exercises there. Exercises 18 to 21 or 22 in the first TSK book. They really explore this notion that the present moment is linked to the past and the future in ways that we don't necessarily always notice. Now, Ron writes here, the present moment is overrated. He's got a little smiley face there. Especially if you think of it as not connected to the past or the future. Right? And again, those exercises in the TSK books are meant to they invite us to look at that in a much more careful way. And then Philip is questioning Michael with respect to the, I think, the bobbing up and down image, the breaking surf or the breeze. And he says, okay, so there's an, I'm just repeating this because I want people to be able to share in the discussion, and not everybody's online. So Philip asks Michael a question. Are you suggesting that time and space are outside of us? I feel better with the idea that we are in them, part of them. And Michael says, I felt more that I was one with the water or the wind. So maybe that's also one with time. So what I want to suggest now is, or kind of move on from this question whether we really are experiencing time, is let's say we do experience time. We experience the immediacy of the present moment, and it may have a kind of a felt change dimension to it. I think part of what the TSK vision wants to say is that that's not in itself enough. And that's important for a different reason. I'll say a little more about why I'm making that claim. But that's important for a different reason, which is that, well, you know, Ron said the present moment is overrated. I would say at the very least that the present moment is very highly rated, you know, in many meditative traditions, in many, it's sort of part of the culture nowadays, at least the part of the culture that most of the people involved in these kind, in this program are probably a part of. There's a lot about, you know, being in the present, living in the now. What else can we say? You know, paying attention to the immediacy of experience. All of that does put us in touch. It seems like what's important with that is exactly that it puts us in touch with the aliveness of time. Ron says, let's be here now, revisited. And yeah, I actually wanted to make that point. This is something some of you have heard me say. I'm not sure I heard this directly from Rinpoche or secondhand, but Rinpoche, let me back up. Some of you may remember that in the 1970s, be here now was kind of a catchphrase. And it's still around, but it was very popular at that time. And Rinpoche once commented on that. He said, people say be here now, but they don't understand be, and they don't understand here, and they don't understand now. We're exploring the part about understanding now. Right? So at one level, you could say it's just a question of not understanding that the present moment does naturally connect out to the past and the future, as the TSK exercises suggest. William James, who talked about something similar, talks about time as being not being a point so much as being like a saddle. You know, it's got a depression in the middle. That's where we live, but it also reaches out toward the past and the future, and we're always occupying that whole range. Another way of talking about the same thing. So what TSK is saying is, let me put it in kind of a simple way. Suppose that we do inhabit the present moment, however we think about that. There's at least two problems with that. One is that we still continue to maintain the separate existence, let's say, of the past and the future, and what that means is that we're not connected with the whole of our being. Now, Rinpoche writes in one of the TSK books that the self, one of the characteristics of the self, is that its being is spread out across time, across past and present and future. So we connect to the present, but we're continuing to maintain, in some sense, that there's a past which is separate from that present and the future that is separate from that present. And that is a built-in limitation that actually is very important. And on a practical level, you could say that it's important because it means that there's a whole lot of time that gets left out, and that contributes to the sense that time bears down on us. You know, time is this force. We're always running out of time. It's because our experience of time, so now I'm assuming that we really do have an immediate present experience or an experience of the present moment, but we've left out most of time or you know, everything but this little point instant, or however you want to think about that. There's many ways to discuss that, and Rinpoche does discuss it in many ways in the TSK books. But we left out a lot, and so that means that time is a force outside ourselves. You know, Philip said before, he likes the idea, or he prefers to the sense that we're in time and space and part of time and space, and that's true. Or you know, there is something that's seems rewarding and nourishing about that sense. But when we commit ourselves to the idea of being in the present, we're kind of running counter to it, because we leave out these other elements, the past and the future. That's one way of thinking about it. Another way of thinking about it is a little different, and these are just kind of straightforward points, I think, is that let's imagine that we have that immediate experience of being in time, that we're connected to our, you know, to the rise and fall of the belly and the breath, let's say. And that's nourishing and rewarding and feels rich. And then we stop, you know, and then we, you know, let's say we're doing that in meditation, and then we get up off the meditation cushion. And unless we can maintain that, which people have a hard time doing usually, you know, we find ourselves right back in this sort of linear time, this index time where we're worried about what's going to happen. And you know, the Buddhist tradition is always saying, this is not a TSK point, they're always saying, let go of the past, let go of the future. You really have no choice in a sense. But in fact, if we try to enjoy the present, we are at the same time kind of confirming the past and the future, and that's part of the problem. So Hayward asks the question here, perhaps the present is related to the consolidated self. And I would say, yeah, absolutely. Rinpoche talks at one point in this chapter about the, what does he call it, the control, I have it written down here somewhere, but I probably won't be able to find it. Here it is, I did. On page 118, he talks about the control and improvement orientation. Well, that's the self, which always wants to control the flow of time and wants to improve itself, wants to make its own situation better or its own character or identity better. Well, that way of thinking, that way of being, is completely committed to this past, present, future structure, and now there's a whole lot of time that we can't be in touch with. So let's say there's this little present moment, which is always disappearing. That we can be in touch with. That's fine, no problem. But what about the rest of time? It's all gone, right? So yes, that's the kind of be here now, as Ron says. He says, yeah, a whole lot of time gets left out. He likes that way of putting it. It's a Walmart brand of a cheapened time. Yeah, I kind of like that. Or Walmart or McDonald's. Or we have our favorites when we're trying to describe the way that time, the way that our ordinary way of thinking cuts us off, leaves us out. It's like the relationship between, you know, processed food and kind of organic food, something like that. Many ways to talk about it. Okay. So there is a sense in which we can say that connection to the present moment is a gateway, but it's not what TSK is aiming for. So having that experience, we do have a connection to time, but we're set it up in such a way that great time, to use the terms that are used in this book, is not available to us. And in fact, that's exactly the point that Rinpoche makes at the top of page 125. He says, the time that operates our realm, interesting way of putting it, the time that operates our realm is the particular version of great time, which is allowed through a specific focal setting on the openness of great space. This time is local. It is the dynamic expression of our lower space. Our local capacity for opening to reality is limited, so a realm appears with us as the observers of a world of things. All this is what's given by time. So, even when we experience the immediacy of time, we're buying in to this lower level version. And so, I said before that the flow of time, or the past, present, future structure, is kind of like the sky. So it stands in relation to great space, great time rather, as the sky stands in relation to great space. Here, maybe this is maybe a better way of thinking about it. The present, which we can connect with, is the local representative of great space. But the possibility of going beyond that, that's where the TSK vision would like to take that. So I'm going to give Ron asking a question here, the last word. He said, wouldn't the disappearing present moment be prized by insight vipassana meditators as being in touch with arising and passing away? Well, right. I don't want to, you know, get into vipassana, Buddhist meditation so much, but there's a lot of meditation tradition, of the meditative traditions, all many kinds, which would say, yes, be in touch with the arising and passing away of the present moment, and that's what the practice is about. TSK is actually saying something, it's not rejecting that, but it's wanting to explore something, I guess you could say, that goes beyond that. I'm not trying to make judgments, but because it's saying, okay, the present moment, the arising and passing away of the present moment, very important. But what about everything that's left out? And if you want a word for what's left out, you could say great time. And Dan comments on that. I think the momentary now model is the major focus in Vipassana. Yeah, exactly. And that really was the point I was trying to make. There's a lot of practices and just, you know, awareness of our breath, but maybe also awareness of the opening to the senses, or the kind of immediacy of moments where we feel most alive, you know, the moments perhaps, for instance, of danger or moments of great love. That's right. But great time, the wholeness of time is something that goes beyond that. So that's what we want to continue to explore. You have a couple of weeks to think about that. In the orientation, I will give you an assignment. And that's where we want to stand. That's where we want to end. That's where we also want to end for today. Okay, thank you very much, everybody.